Thank you.
Thank you. I would like to thank the organizer for the invitation to be here for a very stimulating conference. So in this talk, I will give an overview of the nonlinear sound waves interaction with a dense granular medium composed of the glass beads, but also the sand particles. I will describe the acoustic probing, but also the acoustic fluidization of the jammed granular medium up to the granular plastic flow. This work basically realized with the former student and the colleagues at University of Paris-Est, in Marne-la-Vallée, and also in Paris 7, and in collaboration with the Los Alamos National Lab, Paul Johnson, who is sitting somewhere, and also with the Leiden University, and as well as the colleagues in the Institut Langevin. Well, among the different states of the granular matter determined by the external driving, we are interested by the solid jammed state, but also the transition to the liquid flowing state via a plastic deformation. To this end, we performed the controlled oscillatory experiments. And two approaches are followed to investigate the unjamming transition. The first one, we try to probe acoustically the elastic modulus softening by the static shear. And also, we try to lower the static threshold by the acoustic fluidization. The second one, we try to monitor the shear modulus decreased by a high amplitude oscillatory mechanical shear. Here is the outline of my talk. In the first part, I will describe the linear sound propagation in a jammed granular solid. So the coherent waves, the multiple scattered waves, as well as the acoustic probing of the failure, like shear bending. In the second part, I will describe the acoustic behavior always in the jammed granular medium, but especially we are interested by the irreversible sound-matter interaction, and also the possible triggering of the flow in a granular layers. I will end up this talk by describing a new experiment on the low-frequency shear waves propagation in a marginal jammed granular medium. So here is the experimental setup developed for studying the elastic wave propagation. So the glass beads or sand particles are confined in a rigid cell here, and the applied stress varies from a few kilopascal to a few megapascal. And a short pulse or a 10 pulse is then sent to an ultrasonic transmitter, and the wave propagation is detected by another ultrasonic transducer. In a jammed granular medium, we know that the elastic waves propagate through this contact force network, which is very inhomogeneous, as shown here by the photoelastic method. And here is a typical ultrasonic transmission through a densely packed glass beads of about 0.7 millimeters. It is excited, sorry.
Is the wavelength of the sound large or small compared to the
bead? You're right. This picture will show you.
Oh,
So this is a typical transmission excited by a short pulse of just 2 microseconds. So you can see here the a typical ultrasound transmission composed of basically 2 parts, a coherent wave of the long wavelength corresponding to self-averaged parallelistic effective modes, and it is followed by high frequency, especially a short wavelength compared to the particle size here, which is scattered by force trends. Yeah. And this multiple scatter waves is very sensitive to any change in the contact force network, that's providing a very sensitive probe to the local rearrangement. I will show you later. So once the elastic wave transport compared to the solid night waves previously is identified, we can measure, for example, here, the compression wave velocity just by the method of time of flight as a function of the confining pressure. So data presented here show basically as a power law with an exponent roughly 1/6. Similar results are also obtained for the packing of sand particles. And these results are in a quite a good agreement with the tradition about with the effective medium theory based on the contact mechanics via a coordination number here, which is mechanically loaded. So a detailed comparison of this model with the data will allow us to deduce a coordination number, which is about 6 for the spheric, for the spheric glass beads, but only 4 for the sand particles. This latter is likely due to the interlocking effect, which allows a metastable structure with a lower coordination number. I will show later that the effective medium theory fears will break down to explain quantitatively the nonlinear acoustic response caused by the rearrangement of the contact network. We have also investigated the elastic anisotropy, which arises from the stress field anisotropy, but also from the fabric, which is associated with the sample preparation. Here are the measured sound velocity of the different sound velocity, compression wave, but also the shear wave velocity propagating along the different direction, parallel to the application of the force or horizontally. And the data agree quite well with the mean field theory. However, we find that the compression wave velocity is basically determined by the stress anisotropy, while the shear wave velocity is also sensitive to the fabric. And this the fabric effect is frequently missed in the standard mean field theory, unfortunately.
Could you remind us what fabric is?
Well, we have the experts probably in audience. It's just a kind of a texture of the contact. So as we show here, for example, yeah. So if you have the different method of the preparation of your sander powers, you can find a kind of a distribution of the contact as a function of the amplitude, which does matter in the granular system. It's well known, I suppose. in the granular community. So, yeah. Now, let's investigate the energy transport of the multiple scatter waves. Here, I present you the time profile of the intensity transmission of the scatter waves, which is obtained by configuration average over 50 configurations. Yeah, this is the profile. By fitting the envelope of this profile with the solution of a diffusion equation, which just describes the random walking of the phonons, we may deduce a diffusion a constant of the wave transport and also a Q factor, which characterizes the internal dissipation inside the granular media. I show you here experiments of ultrasound multiple scattering through respectively a dry packing and a wet one. So the absorption of the multiple scatter waves in the wet system is remarkable. And detailed studies show that this dissipation is basically interfacial. In the dry packing, it is dominated by the frictional loss, while in a wet system is determined by a viscous loss via the trapped liquid film by the aspirate. Now, let's investigate the shear bending, which is mentioned yesterday in several conferences. So here it's just a direct shear box, which is combined with the shear wave propagation I show here. So I plot here a classical mechanical response, the shear force, the normalized shear force as function of the horizontal displacement for the dense packing and also for the loose one. As well as the response of the granular medium, shear the granular medium, on the reloading. In the same direction, this a black one, or in the opposite direction. After the formation of the shear band, the shear wave velocity is monitored during this shear bending. So the softening, as we observed here, for the shear wave velocity in the dense packing, as well as the loose packing, could be understood more or less by a kind of a decrease of the coordination number within the framework of the effective medium theory, which is consistent with the numerical simulation. I would like to say words about what is happening for the shear velocity, the very little variation during the reloading in the same direction, in the opposite direction. As soon as the shear band is formed during the first loading, what is happening after that, as if two block solids, which slides one against the other across an interface which is very thin. In that case, there is no particular reason to observe the variation of the shear wave velocity, the shear wave travel time. Well, I would like to also show you the response of the shear box, the shear medium in the shear box, on a cyclic shear loading and reloading for the mechanical response and the shear wave velocity. We see that if the loading and unloading amplitudes, the maximum amplitude is lower than a certain value, the medium exhibits a kind of elastic hysteric behavior, both for the mechanical response and the wave velocity. As soon as the amplitude is high enough, forming the shear band, just like the previous illustration, again, we see that the acoustic signature via the shear wave velocity remains almost a constant because the shear band is very fragile. It's just a kind of solid block sliding along this fault, if you can say that, in terms of granular fault gauge. We are also interested by the precursor events before failure and also during the dense flow. So here, investigated with the correlation function of the multiple scatter waves. As I mentioned previously, it is very, these waves are very sensitive to any local change in the contact of force network. So the correlation of a function in green here is obtained for a shearing of the dense packing, and also for a loose one, which illustrates clearly intermittent dynamics, which is likely associated with the rearrangement of the ground position or just the contact network, as shown here by this zoom picture. We suppose the mechanical response and the decoration of the acoustic spectrums called multiple scatter waves means the same thing. We are trying to monitor more quantitatively this kind of contact breaking or making by what we call the CODA interferometry, widely utilized in the seismology. In the second part of this talk, I will discuss the nonlinear sound propagation in the jammed granular medium. On the level of the ground contacts, we identify two kinds of nonlinearity. One arises from the Hertzian nonlinearity, normal contact, when the sound amplitude is very small compared to the overlap by the pre-stress. We observed the classical response, such as harmonic generation, even it is acoustically nonlinear. In strongly nonlinear regime, where the wave of vibration is larger than the overlap, as explained by Vitaly previously, we find a kind of e-elastic waves, he termed it as a solid-like waves, and Vincenzo this morning showed that which exist, even Bob Bringer also in 2D or 3D system. So this is a kind of solid-like shock waves, which is not the elastic sound waves. The other nonlinearity arises from the friction force, which plays a crucial role in a disordered granular backing. The nonlinearity, the frictional nonlinearity of the middling type is responsible not only to the frictional dissipation, but also to the weakening of the shear modulus when the oscillation amplitude is increased. Now, let's look at the experimental proofs. In three cases, I will start with the harmonic generation created by Tempest here. So yeah, Tempest and detected. So the filter of the fundamental component and the second harmonics even the third harmonics, but here I just show for the fundamental and the second harmonics transmitted signals measured as a function of the source amplitude. So we recover the linear and the quadratic dependence, very classic in ordinary elastic medium. However, when acoustic amplitude is just beyond a few percent, just a few percent of the ground overlap, the sound-matter interaction becomes irreversible, which is combined with small but measurable crick-like compaction. Then the results deviate seriously from the prediction of the effect median theory, which is likely due to the rearrangement of the contact network. Another important finding is the softening of the sound the velocity when the source amplitude, when the wave amplitude is increased up to 10% or even more. So here I show you a set of data. As mentioned before, we find two regimes of the sound matter interaction as a function of the source amplitude. In the regime one, the sound matter interaction is reversible. In other words, after the high amplitude acoustic perturbation, we try to probe it with a very small amplitude acoustic waves to check if the structure is changed. It is not. For example, if you come back in the regime one, the sound velocity remains unchanged. There is neither any compaction of the medium. And the correlation function of the multiple scatter waves shows that there's no any change because this probe is very sensitive. However, in the regime two, beyond a certain amplitude, which is confining pressure dependent, the sound matter interaction becomes irreversible. In other words, after the high amplitude acoustic perturbation here, the compression wave, the velocity, and accordingly, the elastical modulus remains weakened. As shown here, the correlation function shows that, and of course, I'm sorry, in conjunction again with crepe-like compaction, and finally, the correlation function of the scatter waves shows that there's a significant change of the contact and network. Now, in the reversible regime, the Mindening model, friction model, predicted quite well the softening of the sound velocity of a few percent. However, in the irreversible regime, we should take into account the decrease of the coordination number, mechanically loaded, as shown, as confirmed very recently by the numerical simulation. Now, let me show you, finally, another experiment on the acoustic, on the nonlinear acoustic propagation in a very weakly compressed medium, just under gravity. So I show you here the variation or the evolution of the compression wave velocity. Together with the normalized amplitude of the transmitted sound pulse, which is measured in the course of time during 1 hour, when the source amplitude ramp up and down. We observed in this configuration, three cases, the acoustic velocity softening as before, but also the hardening of the velocity and sometimes the oscillation between the two. Well, in these three cases, we don't observe a visible change in the packing density. So another observation is that you see here we have a very close correlation between the velocity measurement and the transmitted amplitude. These results could be understood by the coefficient of a transmission of the sound waves in terms of the impedance of the grounded medium. So here we try to explain qualitatively the softening and the hardening of the sound velocity by the change of the coordination number, which could be deduced via a kind of acoustic fluidization via the slip, slippage. But also, we may observe in some cases the increase of the increase of the coordination number. In that case, we may imagine a kind of acoustic buckling. Again, the effective median theory fails to account for quantitative the data, I mean, of this important velocity change. If we follow the effective median, that means the coordination number change will be more than 20% from a loose packing to a dense one. As I mentioned, we don't observe any significant change in the packing density. So it's a signature of the breakdown of the effective median theory. Vincenzo mentioned this morning also due to the non-affine deformation of the particle motion. So we believe over observation of the elastic weakening, particularly by the acoustic fluidization, could be helpful for better understand the unjamming transition in terms of the kind of effective temperature. In the different cases, such as the earthquake triggering, but also the avalanche triggered by the vibrated grounding medium, as well as the sliding triggering of the glassy interfaces. Here, I will just show you a response of a weakly adhesive interface, which is sheared by an inclined plane up to failure, in other words, the sliding, which is combined with ultrasonic measurement. So you can see here, you have the thin film, adhesive film here. You have a layer of monospheric particles, which is deposed, spin-coated on a quartz resonator. So it's a kind of ultrasonic resonator. So two main results are found. The first one is the elastic softening of interfacial stiffness before failure, before sliding, induced either by the static shear. You can see you have a softening of the interfacial stiffness, but also induced by an oscillatory ultrasonic shear. The second result is that the triggering of the sliding well below the sliding angle. For example, we can see here the sliding angle is 35 degrees, but in the presence of ultrasonic vibration, the sliding happens at 19, less than 20 degrees. So we triggered, we do trigger the sliding. Well, it's important to note that the ultrasonic frequency is about 5 megahertz. It's much larger than the characteristic frequency of the slider and the interface. So the ultrasonic vibration cannot induce any, macroscopic sliding. Nevertheless, this decrease of the static friction could be understood by kind of acoustic fluidization or lubrication of the stuck contact. When you vibrate it, you may break the contact here. And as the ultrasonic frequency is much larger than the 1 over the relaxation time of the polymer films. So once the interface is fluidized, it remains in the fluidized state, prevented from the heating. This acoustic fluidization is independent of the polarization of the oscillating force. In that case, we may present the decrease of the static threshold as a function of a vibration amplitude in a diagram of the phase transition here, which is very famous. And just to tell you that we have also realized the similar experiments in a granular layer very recently, and we have also triggered the flow of the granular flow well below the avalanche angle. This is a work in progress. So very quickly, for the last few minutes, I will tell you, describe a very recent experiment of a low-frequency shear wave propagation along the free surface here of a water-saturated granular sediments, in which we monitored the shear wave velocity up to the plastic flow. More precisely, we have this rough metallic plate which served as shear plane waves, ranging the frequency ranging from 100 to 500 hertz. So it's a very low frequency for us. And the shear wave propagation is detected by ultra-fast ultrasonic scanner, which film the motion of the particles at the surface induced by the shear wave propagation. So here, the out-of-plane surface displacement is obtained by a correlation technique of the successive backscattered the ultrasound through the water. And we measure a dispersion of the shear pulse, the velocity as a function of the frequency, which is likely associated with a kind of fractal shear mode. But here I will skip this detail. Just to say, if we increase the oscillation amplitude, we see the time of flight increased, which corresponds to a softening of the group velocity up to 30%, so about 3 times larger than the softening of the compression wave velocity. Again, we may apply the effective median theory to qualitatively understand the harmonic generation as well as the softening of the sound velocity, shear wave velocity via the decrease of the coordination number. Again, quantitatively, this theory fails due to, as mentioned before, the rearrangement of the contact network. I would like to stress that in this unjamming transition, the motion of the particles is not important. We don't see any motion. So what is happening if we keep increasing the oscillation amplitude up to the observation of a plastic flow associated with the grand motion? Well, if the grain escapes via the dilatancy from the cage, and if the characteristic motion is comparable to the ultrasonic wavelengths, the ultrasonic speckles should be changed. It is almost the case here, the order of a magnitude works here. So I show you the difference between the ultrasonic speckles patterns in two limiting cases with the low oscillation amplitude and the high one. So clearly, the granular solids undergoes exhibit a plastic granular flow on the highest oscillation. And if we measure the shear wave velocity during this engine up to flowing, we measure a shear wave velocity less than 10 meters per second, which corresponds to a softening of the shear wave a modulus more than 50%. According to the classic theory of elasticity, that will correspond to more than 80% of the softening. So we would like to say, to our knowledge, the first time we observed an acoustic signature during an unjamming transition, combined with a plastic granular flow. To summarize, so we have developed a kind of multiple scale acoustics of the granular medium in which the sound waves used both as a probe but also as a pump. Thank you for your attention.
Really nice talk, Jeff. Can you hear me? Yeah. That last experiment is pretty impressive. But I had a question regarding the behavior of hardening, softening, and oscillatory velocity change. Can you go back to that slide?
In the last experiment?
It was the experiment where you are working under gravity, and
okay,
you're looking at both hardening, softening, and oscillatory change in velocity. That's the one. Was that repeatable? In other words, could you repeat hardening, could you repeat softening and oscillatory changes?
No.
And no. Could you predict what would happen?
No, we are just happy to observe the different cases. But you know, for a granular medium under gravity, the initial state is very hard to control. So we just prepare our samples as we could. And the different state or different configuration, we don't observe, just to say, compared to our compressed granular medium, which is very dense at the initial state, the vibration only produce a kind of fluidization by the dilatancy. But I think this free surface situation, the vibration sometimes can also compassify the medium. This is the message.
Okay, thanks.
That was essentially my same question. Just let me, a subtle difference to it, though, is that, is there a sense that if you compared it above or below the dilatancy transition that you saw either strengthening or, sorry, softening or hardening more consistently? I mean, could you, if you prepared them looser, could you ensure that it would harden, and if you preferred them harder, could you ensure that it would loosen?
Okay, for the moment, I did not carry out, this careful experiment. So for the moment, we just observed three cases. This work should be followed. I think we may probably prepare the sample in a much more controlled way. For example, just the vibrate in this direction or that direction.
It's like using Chicago tapping protocol or something, yeah.
But for the moment, no. Just to say, well, the different situation may exist.
Okay.
Xiaoping, I have a quick question. So when you have regimes where you can measure the harmonic generation, and then as you, I think, increase the amplitude of the sound, it deviates from effective medium theory? Yeah. So if you drive it into the regime where you're getting contact breaking and forming, do you get well-defined frequency content, or can you get into a regime where it looks more like noise? Do you know what I'm asking?
If I understand you. Well, in this regime, we still observed the harmonics, the frequency, the component is still there.
But in that regime, can you quantify? So my basic question is, if you're in a regime where contacts are breaking and forming a lot, do you still see frequency content? Here, you don't have a comparison slide where you show sort of the number of contacts that are breaking and forming.
No, we don't have the model, so we don't know how to quantify that.
Okay.
So I maybe you said this and I missed it, but when you shear your system, you create some, as you say, a fabric and stress anisotropy in your system. And so then there's a, let's say, a preferred compressive direction and a weak direction. And then that means that if you then proceed to excite another shear wave, you already have an anisotropic structure, and you are now exciting it in an anisotropic fashion as well. And so there really is an interesting interplay between the, if you like, the preferred direction of your initial fabric and the preferred direction of your shear wave. And I'm wondering if you've thought about that, because you could actually be driving it along the strong direction, or you could be driving it along maybe a weaker direction. And so it seems like it's a very complex angular issue once you start looking at a pre-sheared system and excite a shear wave in it.
Okay, if I understand your question, in these studies for the anisotropy or in the other experiments, the sound waves for the moment are just utilized as a probe. So we did not utilize waves to break or to modify.
I had the impression that you sheared your system and then also propagated a shear wave into it, and therefore you is that not true?
Okay, just a moment. It's here.
Yeah. So yeah. Well, yeah. So maybe I'm misreading what you did to your system, but it would be an interest. Okay. So I have an experiment for you. Pre-shear it, and then examine the property of shear waves as a function of the polarization angle relative to the polarization of the
okay.
fabric.
I got it. Well, it's not yet done. So it's thank you for the suggestion. Because if we want to do something just like in the crystal, the actual setup is not ready. But you are completely right. I think it's very interesting and very important in the future to investigate.
Sorry, maybe I have a quick question. Just when you were talking about dissipation, you said that it's changing when the environment is wet. And can you just comment on, and you said that then dissipation is not dominated by friction, but by viscous dissipation. Is it true independently on the pressure or the amplitude of the waves?
Yeah, and not a detail here. Yes, we have, if I understand the question, we have to do some detailed study. Just to say, if the dissipation is frictional, that we know that if you increase the confined pressure, you will block it. So if you keep the same amplitude of the sound waves, the dissipation, I mean, the frictional dissipation will decrease. This is what we observed. In contrast, for this mechanism, in the wet system, it's the opposite. It's very funny. When you compress it more, you will create a larger area of the contact where the liquid films will participate in a much more important way. So in short, if you increase the confining pressure, the viscous dissipation will be more important, and the frictional loss will be less. This is what we have observed. It's the reason for that we speculate, we interpret, the results saying that in the dry system, the frictional dissipation is the most important, and in the wet system, is the viscous dissipation by the thin film, trapped at the asperity, which dominate.
This is what you call the nonlinear viscosity?
Okay, you're right. I should precise it. The frictional dissipation is nonlinear, you can imagine, because of the sliding. Here, the viscous dissipation is linear, just like the linear viscoelastic, which is independent of the amplitude. This is what we observed also in experiments.
Vitaly has one final question.
Oh, yeah. Very nice presentation. I am wondering, for some phenomena, shearing with subsequent breaking of particles inside shear is very important. Can you detect this moment? You just shear, right? You create dilatation. You have some interesting features. But if you start break particles, like under large precompression or large displacement, you probably will be able to detect with your technique moment of breaking particles inside shear band. Are you able to do this or do you?
Thank you. For the moment, no. You know, we are in the physical lab, so the loading is not very high. But it's a very good suggestion. We try to collaborate with our colleagues from geophysics. They are interested always by a very high loading. So the shear box that we are preparing for the future would be something which is heavily loaded. So probably it will help us to attain this regime where the particles might be breaking just like in granular fault bottles.
Let's thank Xiaoping and come back at 4 o'clock for Karen and Stefan.